nations. It's rather like a question that whether nilpotent symmetries, meaning that Lie algebras with nilpotent generators, could or could not be, play a role in unification concepts. So the talk is based on two papers. The main idea was presented here, and the more concrete example model was posted on archive last week. So just a brief, well, I think to this audience, I don't need to introduce that. There are some, yeah. Okay. There are some no-go theorems on unification of the Poincaré symmetries with the standard model internal gauge symmetries, the compact gauge symmetries. Very well known by actually the first no-go theorem was worked out by McGlynn, and a few years later, a bit more general result was worked out by Coleman and Mandula. And in order to bypass these kind of prohibitive results, there was a new symmetry concept, the supersymmetry, which was proposed, and it was proven by Hag, Lopushansky, and Zonius that it could bypass Coleman-Mandula theorem. And but this super three hints about supersymmetry up to now has not been seen explicitly experimentally up to now. So I think it might be a valid question that do kind of mathematical alternative similar to SUSY but a little bit different, more conservative alternative, do they exist? We will review these kind of things. And it seems that there might be, at least mathematically, a group theoretical mechanism which eventually could help in this. And for brevity, we will mostly speak in the special relativistic limit with global gauge symmetries, so with Poincaré symmetries as the space-time symmetries, and globally acting compact symmetries just for simplicity. But in fact, you can make this generally, the arguments generally covariant. So assume this kind of idea that we are looking for some kind of model which we believe that there is it has a classical field theory limit. I guess this is not a very strong assumption. In a classical field theory, we have a kind of finite degrees of freedom per space-time point over a four-dimensional ordinary space-time. So it should be some, in a generally covariant theory, it should be based on some kind of some vector bundle. The matter field should sit in some kind of a vector bundle. And the special relativistic limit of this theory is basically when you only consider the first order symmetry, so the tangent at the point. A diffeomorphism invariant Lagrangian is constrained by its first order symmetries at points of space-time. This can be made precise in a formal differential geometric language, which I won't spend time with. And such symmetry generators are finitely many because they act on finite degrees of freedom. So they will always form a finite dimensional Lie algebras. Their generators will form finite dimensional Lie algebras. And if you integrate it, it will be a finite dimensional Lie group. Of course, it's not a big surprise. So it is well justified to look at the general structure of the most general Lie groups and Lie algebras. So general structure of finite dimensional real Lie groups and Lie algebras, if we disregard the global topology, so the connected, so we, if we only consider the basic of the Lie algebraic structure, then which will be the topic of this talk, then the most important ingredient is the signature of the Killing form. So if we take the Killing form, which is of course not a very exotic object, then it may have definite or indefinite signature, and eventually it may even degenerate. So it's in a certain basis, you might have in its matrix representation plus ones and minus one, it's in its diagonal, and eventually one might have degenerate directions of the Killing form, which are orthogonal to everybody. And then there is the Levy decomposition theorem of Lie algebras, which says that any finite dimensional Lie group, I mean, of course, modulo global topology, is a semi-direct product of the degenerate directions of the Killing form, so these guys sitting here, and of the non-degenerate, so the rest of the directions. Of course, because here the killing form is non-degenerate, if you find an invariant Sublie algebra, automatically the killing orthocomplement will be also invariant, so it falls apart to further non-divisible simple, so-called simple components. And they might act on these degenerate directions of the killing form. This is called the radical or solvable part, and this is called the Levy factor or semi-simple part, and this is what Dinkin theory is about. So mostly by Lie group theory, people mean in physics theory of these guys, yeah? And of course, a very educative example is simply the affine symmetries of an Euclidean plane, which can be split as the translations, semi-direct product with the rotations. So the rotations are these guys, and the translations is an extremely simple version of these solvable symmetries. The traditional gauge theory folklore is that only the semi-simple groups are important, like SUN and groups like that. However, of course, Poincaré group gives a nice counterexample which demonstrates this kind of Levy decomposition theorem, of course, with an extremely simple abelian radical. However, if you go to the super Poincaré group, one can realize that, in fact, one can make the radical more fat. So the super Poincaré group is a finite dimensional real Lie group whose Levy factor is the ordinary Lorentz group, and the radical is the super translation group. The super translation group is simply defined as a kind of Lie group action on a kind of a vector bundleized structure where you put here the spacetime coordinates, here you put the super coordinates, you make a super translation, which here in the super coordinates it will be just a translation. In the space-time coordinate, it will be also a translation, but space-time translations get an additional bilinear contribution from the bilinear combination of the supercoordinate and the supertranslation shift parameter. So this is a finite dimensional real Lie group. Of course, this is not the nowadays widespread presentation of supersymmetry, because normally people think about supersymmetry in the infinitesimal way, and in a particular presentation, which is will make up a super Lie algebra, but one of course one can transform this to an ordinary Lie algebra view by simply taking the super coordinates and multiplying them by a basis of super coordinates, and one can create these delta operators instead of these Q operators, and these delta operators, which basically these are the infinitesimal change of superfields, will make, together with the other generators, ordinary Lie algebra. So if one wants, supersymmetry also has an ordinary finite dimensional real Lie algebra presentation. And if you exponentiate it, you get the pertinent Lie group. So in other words, supersymmetry is not so exotic. One can put it in an equal footing with other Lie group or Lie algebra theory considerations. Now, so knowing this, it is interesting to ask mathematical questions, what are all the possible finite dimensional Lie algebra or Lie group extensions of the Poincaré group? And actually this was addressed like many, many years ago by Orafferty, and he used actually this particular Levy decomposition theorem. So again, if these are the collection of all symmetries, this is the radical and this is the Levy factor split into two simple components, then you have two choices. Either you embed the radical into the radical of the bigger group and the indecomposable Levy factor into one of the simple components of the Levy factor of the big group, or you have to embed together the entire Poincaré group into one of the simple components of the big group. This splits into two subcases. Of course, the trivial extension falls into this case. It doesn't harm this kind of ordering. But one might embed the Poincaré group in this kind of way into a bigger group in an indecomposable way, but it follows then that the radical must necessarily be more fat than simply the translations. And for example, supersymmetry, extended supersymmetry, and also our example, which we will show in a moment, falls into this case. This one is, for example, when you embed the Poincaré group into a simple group. For example, the conformal Poincaré group, which contains, of course, the Poincaré group, happens to be isomorphic to SO24, and as such, it is simple. So any theory which contains this or similar it falls into this classification case. Of course, in this case, a kind of symmetry breaking mechanism is needed to be invoked to recover a gauge theory-like limit, so to point out the space-time directions, to distinguish the space-time directions from the other internal degrees of freedom, whereas here you don't have that much of a problem. So, of course, one can play the same game as Orefertí. So here is, again, our extended Lie group, and here is Poincaré group. This I just redraw these arrows of this previous Orefertí theorem argument. And you can repeat the same argument for the compact internal symmetries, which is actually not discussed in the literature, but eventually it's not a big deal. So you can again say that a compact Lie group splits according to the Levy decomposition theorem, where in the radical you can only have copies of U1, and instead of the semi-direct product, you necessarily have the direct product. And of course, here are the non-Abelian compact components, simple components. And you might embed the U1 into the radical, and you can only embed the Levy factor into the Levy factor, or you can again embed everything together into the Levy part of the group. So how, in the light of all this, how SUSY or extended SUSY works in the light of this Levy decomposition theorem? Well, it works in a way that you have the Lorentz group in the Levy factor, you have the compact internal symmetries, in the radical you have the translations, eventually you might have other Abelian generators, central charges, and these sit in a so-called two-step nilpotent Lie group, where here the complementing generators to the Abelian sector don't split as a semi-direct product, don't split as a standalone group, but together the group relations do close. So this is what I denote by, let's say, semi-semi-direct product, which means that only that this is a normal sub-Lie algebra, but this doesn't close as a standalone Lie algebra. And of course, the Lorentz group has the non-vanishing natural action on the translation generators. And also, the unification happens so that the whole construction is not a direct product, because the compact internal symmetries as well as the Lorentz group acts non-trivially on the with the adjoint group action on this sector of the radical. So this is the group theoretical phenomenon what drives the SUSY mechanism. And because of this, so you cannot separate this group without cutting the arrows. Yeah. So the external super Poincaré group is therefore direct indecomposable. I mean, which is the mathematical term for being unified. So it connects space-time symmetries with the compact internal symmetries and connects potentially independent compact internal symmetries with each other. And because of this, again, the unifiedness, the running of the couplings do unify. And as mentioned, it is operated by the Orefertí theorem case B, so by making the radical more fat. Now, this is very nice, but one needs to consider that actually a symmetry breaking mechanism is still needed, because in SUSY or extended SUSY, the non-Poincaré symmetries do not act space-time point-wise, so this is kind of a different symmetry group in comparison to ordinary gauge theory. In ordinary gauge theories, you have vector bundle symmetries, so which means that all the non-Poincaré generators act space-time point-wise on the fields. So it's like this. However, in SUSY or extended SUSY, the supertranslation generators do not act space-time point-wise, so you cannot consider it really a vector bundle automorphism group. So if you take a distinguished space-time point all the field values above it, including the supercoordinates, then the supertranslations will translate given field value into a field value shifted into a different space-time point, and the amount of shift depends in where you are in the supercoordinate. So it's not a vector bundle automorphism group. And this kind of behavior is very different from a standard model like gauge theory limit. So I think it could be valid to ask the question whether this is a feature or a bug. Yeah. So one can ask the mathematical question, Can one avoid? Can one?
Just a question. I'm a bit puzzled by what you just said. I would say in this connection that this is not a vertical automorphism.
Exactly.
But it could still be an automorphism in the usual
mathematics. It won't preserve if you consider the super coordinates into the fiber. Then it won't preserve the vector. You can show that you won't preserve the vector bundle structure. So it will be not a projectable vector field. The flow of the super translations as a Lie derivative on the total space will be not projectable. Yeah. And this is what I mean, that it's not compatible with the vector bundle concept, unless you consider, of course, the super coordinates into the base manifold. Yeah, so they cannot be in the vertical. But one can ask the mathematical question, can one make the following construction, which I name conservative extensions of the Poincaré group? Can one do such a thing that all the non-Poincaré, that we are looking for an indecomposable group, where the non-Poincaré generators are really internal, that is, they only act point-wise, baseline point-wise. It turns out that this question happens to be equivalent, that can one find an injection of the Poincaré group into a bigger Lie group with a restrictive back homomorphism back onto the Poincaré group, such that you get the identity when you go from here to here. This question happens to also be equivalent, that is it possible to make such an extended Lie group containing the Poincaré that you don't need a symmetry breaking for a gauge theory-like limit, so that this bigger group still is a vector bundle automorphism group over the space-time as the base manifold. As we have seen, the super Poincaré group or the extended super Poincaré group is a non-conservative extension of the Poincaré group. So because of the Orafferty theorem, and it's not very difficult to see that the most general structure of a conservative extension of the Poincaré group is like this, that you have the translation similar to translations, you must have some nilpotent internal symmetries, you can have some compact internal symmetries and the Lorentz group, and you should have both compact internal charges and Lorentz charges for the nilpotent internal symmetry. So this is because combination of the Orafferty theorem, and if you want energy non-negativity for the gauge fields based on such a theory, then these symmetries may not only be semi-simple, but they need to be compact. So this is a kind of distantly similar symmetry unification principle, similar to extended SUSY, because it uses this Orafferty theorem case B, with making the radical more fat. But the important difference is that the radical is really, only the radical is a direct product of the translations and the nilpotent, the exotic internal symmetries. So nilpotent means that the adjoint with the generator is nilpotent operator on the Lie algebra. So it is just a technique term. So in such a conservative Poincaré group extension, all the non-Poincaré symmetries are internal. So it's really a vector bundle automorphism group. And one can also see very easily that it can be presented in a way that you have all the internal symmetries, including the nilpotent and compact ones, semi-direct product with the Poincaré. SUSY doesn't admit this property, so this is a different construction in comparison to SUSY. Of course, this is a nice definition, but the definition could be empty. We have shown a group explicitly with a compact component of U1 that such a definition is not empty, at least not mathematically empty, and it happens to be a symmetric group of a quantum field theory-inspired algebra. The price to pay, as we have seen, that the full internal symmetry group, this is because simply of Lie algebra theory, cannot be purely compact, but it has to be at least this form, that you have a semi-direct product of a nilpotent and of a compact part. Now, one can immediately ask, this is an issue. The nilpotent generators have vanishing killing forms, so they are in the degenerate directions of the killing form. So the corresponding gauge fields, if you dream about the theory having these kind of symmetries, the corresponding gauge fields will have zero Young-Mills kinetic Lagrangian. So this issue has to be addressed, and I will come back in a few slides. Now, assume that you take a conservative Poincaré group extension, then by construction, that's why it's constructed in such a way that this is the full group, which can be presented in this way, that you have the nilpotent internal symmetry semi-direct product with the compact ones and the Poincaré. So this is, again, you can equivalently reformulate a conservative extension of the Poincaré group in this form. And one could dream about a theory when, where you have some fundamental degrees of freedom on which this unified group acts, but you will still have a homomorph, a surjective homomorphism onto this part, where you could think that maybe this only acts on some derived, not fundamental degrees of freedom. This is the usual split Poincaré times the gauge symmetries, what we observe in nowadays in a gauge theory. And it seems to be describing nature. So because of there is a surjective homomorphism onto this kind of known behavior, there is no contradiction with the experimental situation, because the, we can assume that maybe such nilpotent symmetries act in some hidden fundamental internal degrees of freedom, which we don't know about explicitly right now. A distant analogy for this kind of forgetting mechanism is when you consider ordinary Dirac theory, which is described by the Dirac wave function, on which the U1 and the Poincaré also acts. Yeah? Poincaré symmetries also act. The field, if you construct the collection of fields bilinear, tensor fields of the wave function, then only it forgets the U1 symmetry, only the Poincaré symmetry acts on it. However, one can show that the collection of the fields bilinears of the wave function uniquely describes it modulo the U1 gauge ambiguity, pointwise U1 gauge ambiguity. So basically, the mapping of the psi into the fields bilinears forget the fundamental internal U1 symmetry. And of course, you can describe the Dirac equation in terms only, or they call it relativistic Madelung variables. You can, in principle, describe Dirac equation in this way. It will be a very ugly, nonlinear, tensorial, hydrodynamical equation. But if you have if you allow this internal symmetry, of course, the Dirac equation will simplify, even though it is not unified. So just because you have a completely independent additional symmetry generator, you get a much more simplified equation for the psi in comparison to the tensorial representation. Now the perspectives. The least exotic solution to a gauge spacetime, or eventually a gauge-gauge symmetry unification, could be the conservative unification pattern. So you insert every known symmetric component in the Levy decomposition to where they belong. So you insert here the Lorentz group to the Levy factor, the standard model internal symmetries, and one could think that there is a hidden nilpotent collection of nilpotent symmetry generators which carry all of the charges, and therefore the unification could happen. In this case, you don't necessarily need symmetry breaking because there is this forgetting homomorphism onto the usual symmetries. And it's group theoretically, it carries this pattern carries the least amount of exoticity. The only exoticity is kind of expelled here, that you need to introduce some kind of nilpotent generators. A bonus is that there is a theorem, a recent theorem by a group theoretician, Libor Schnobel, that if you have such a group and it's really unified, you can have maximum one copy of U1 here. So for example, it's a kind of prediction, in quotation marks, that if we discover, let's say, another U1 field, this mechanism cannot explain it.
So can I think of this as, if I was to unify U1, SU2, 3 into SU5, your nilpotent generators and the additional SU5 generators?
No, in SU5 is simple. So exactly, this is in SU5, the problem is that it's a simple group, so you just have an injective. Let me go back to this page. In SU5, basically, you only have an injection, let's say, of your standard model symmetries into SU5, but you don't have a forgetting homomorphism back onto your split, which you inject. So this is why you cannot do this mechanism with the ordinary simple or semi-simple or U1 and semi-simple Lie groups. That's the point. That's the whole point, that you need to consider the most general mathematical phase space of Lie algebras or Lie groups. Yeah?
In your example, does the nilpotent generator commute with the
compact symmetries or?
No, no, they carry compact charges. That's the point. You have to introduce. So if you want it to be indecomposable, then U1 sits here, yeah? And
yep.
It has to carry U1 charges and Lorentz charges as well. That's why the unification happens, yeah? Group theoretically. Yeah?
Okay.
So coming back to SU5 means the nil.
Yeah, the nil potents, they don't act.
Yeah.
So the compact symmetries act on the nil potent symmetries, but the nil potent symmetries, the commutators of these guys sit here, and they don't contribute back. Yeah, it's like a nil potent symmetry is like a one-way mixing when you have two subspaces and you one subspace contributes to the other, but the other subspace doesn't contribute back. Yeah, that's the point. That's why it's nilpotent, yeah?
G with N only gives N.
Yeah. In a semi-simple Lie algebra, it's important, so maybe I spend a few minutes. In a semi-simple Lie algebra like SU5, etc., you cannot go to zero by commuting generators. If you you consider Pauli matrices, commutator of Pauli matrices will be another Pauli matrix. But in case of nilpotent Lie algebras, you can eventually go to zero. Yeah, that's the basic difference. And it's normally not considered in physics, except for supersymmetry, yeah?
Can I just ask, is nilpotent symmetry is compact? Or
No. They are outside.
You call it U1. U1 is a compact.
Yes, U1 is a compact.
But is your example compact or not?
No. The U1 sits here, yeah?
No, but you said you have an example where
yes.
Is U1.
No, the compact one is U1. The compact component is U1.
Sorry.
It's like an Abelian.
Your nilpotent one is non-compact.
Of course, it cannot be compact. No, nilpotent generator can be generating a compact symmetry.
Okay.
The compact symmetries actually are distinguished by the fact that on their Lie algebra you can have a positive definite scalar product, and on the nilpotent you cannot have.
Yes.
Now, again, so you need to get rid of these nilpotent generators somehow in your theory. But I will come back to this question later. So again, the whole point in this conservative extension, this forgetting mechanism, yeah? If nature would like this kind of mechanism, it would restrict the number of copies of U1s to one, yeah? So it's a kind of prediction in quotation marks. Now,
and no restriction on the simple?
Probably it imposes some restrictions, but this I'm not a group theoretician, so... Actually, this is a contemporary branch of group theory. So unfortunately, there are not that many ready. You can see that this is a paper from 2010. So this is the theory of nilpotent Lie algebras or solvable Lie algebras in general is unfortunately can be proven to be very hard. And there are not that many results. Well, I talked to this mathematician and he says that there might be a chance to address this problem if you fix this component, the Levy factor, which we can fix because we know that these are the standard model gauge symmetries. So eventually we might address this question to mathematicians, what are group theoretically the possible nilpotent symmetries which carry these this prescribed Levy factor.
Say one more time, it predicts only one U1 because why?
What
goes wrong?
This is a group theoretical result. I it's not easy to prove it. Yeah. So it is a theorem that if you have such a unified group structure, then you can have zero or one copy of U1 there. Yeah. With some very mild assumptions. Just group theoretically. Yeah. There is no physics inside. So now what to do with these nilpotent guys? Yeah, so if there are some nilpotent internal symmetries, they would give in a theory some funny gauge fields. So because of the presence of these nilpotent internal generators, they act on the matter fields, of course, which, as I argue, this could be eventually plausible. But what do we do with the corresponding gauge fields? Well, they have a vanishing Young-Mills kinetic term, so they cannot have kinetic energy, and they cannot have propagate. They eventually still could contribute to matter field Lagrangians. So then their Euler-Lagrange equations would be kind of strange, yeah, wouldn't it? And so it would be some funny algebraic constraint equation without, on the left-hand side, without a wave operator, yeah, in their Euler-Lagrange equation.
Sorry, does it matter if the nilpotent part is continuous or discrete?
It is continuous. It is always continuous. I'm only speaking about continuous symmetry. Discrete symmetries is an even further complication. This talk is merely about the continuous symmetries.
I, And
yeah.
if they appeared in the Lagrangian without the kinetic term, wouldn't they just, if you buried, you just get a constraint of the curve?
Yes, yes, but let me go to the next slide. It is just a question for the, let's say, motivation. Yeah. So at least it would be kind of a constraint equation, algebraic.
Current damage.
Yeah, yeah, but it will be not an implicit constraint, etc. But one could do the following trick. Observe that the ordinary Dirac kinetic Lagrangian can be regarded not only as a U1 gauge theory, for example, but a D1 times U1 gauge theory, where D1 denotes simply the positive real numbers with the multiplication, that is the dilatation group, the one-dimensional scaling group. Yeah, you could consider it as a gauge theory with this kind of D1 times U1 internal group in the following way. Assume that your fundamental variables are the Clifford map, the Dirac wave function, and the covariant gradient of the covariant derivative of the Dirac wave function. And of course, the Lagrangian is the standard Dirac Lagrangian. This is the metric volume form subordinate to the Clifford map. And then you have the Dirac Lagrangian density, where here the nabla is understood to be the ordinary metric nabla, plus the gauge potential. So now we suppress the explicit notation for the gauge potential, and we understand it within the nabla. And it can eventually carry D1 charges because besides the usual U1 phase symmetry, it has a scaling symmetry that if you scale with appropriate power of the scaling field, the wave function, the Clifford map, and also you make the corresponding gauge transformation on the gauge covariant derivative, then of course it is by construction symmetric to this, because the gauge fields of D1 absorb this logarithmic derivative of the scaling field, and the powers of the scaling is just that they neutralize each other in the Lagrange form. This is triviality, yeah? But this Lagrangian has a hidden affine shift symmetry, meaning that you take these field variables and you modify the gauge covariant derivation, that you change the D1 part of the, arbitrarily, the D1 part of the gauge connection, which is technically means that you add a real covector field to the nabla. This means that you shift the gauge covariant derivation of the D1 part. And because you have here the real part and you have the I here, this cancels from the Lagrangian. This is a triviality as well. If you put these two together, it follows that the Dirac kinetic Lagrangian has a curious internal symmetry, a D1 internal symmetry, that it acts locally and faithfully on the fundamental matter fields, on psi and the gamma, but you don't have to compensate it in the gauge covariant derivation. You may or may not add the logarithmic gradient compensating term, because it drops out due to this shift symmetry. So it is a very odd behavior. It's a kind of, you can consider that Dirac equation has an internal symmetry which acts only on the matter fields, and you can transform out the corresponding gauge fields from the Lagrangian. Yeah? And one can ask the question, can similar trick be used to get rid of the nilpotent gauge bosons previously mentioned? And the answer happens to be yes, at least mathematically. So last week we posted a paper on archive which shows some funny Lagrangians which show that at least this definition is mathematically not empty. However, from the construction it follows that this kind of cancellation of the corresponding gauge boson, the necessary conditions for this is that this part of the internal symmetry group which cancels out in this way needs to reside in a normal, so ad invariant, Sabli algebra of internal symmetries, meaning that on the left-hand side of a semi-direct product. Yeah, so this is seems to be a mathematically viable mechanism that you will have some local nilpotent internal symmetries which will act on the matter field sector, and the corresponding gauge field you can identically transform out from the Lagrangian. So although formally they may be present in the gauge covariant derivation, but they don't contribute to any observable.
Sorry, it seems to be just the statement that the Dirac Lagrangian
yeah.
kinetic term is conformal invariant.
Yes, it is related to that, but it is a bigger symmetric group than that.
Why is it bigger?
Because this means that, basically the conformal invariance is basically this one.
Yes.
But the this extra symmetry, which is on top of that, it means that the Dirac Lagrangian is in fact insensitive to a D1 gauge connection. It's completely insensitive. So it's not only invariant a pointwise rescaling of the fields, but it's also insensitive if you shift the D1 gauge potential. So it's
locally conformal invariant.
It's locally conformal invariant is this thing, and this guy is a slight extra symmetry on top of that, and this is why you can have this combination of the two, that you don't need to compensate the covariant derivative because one can show that this is related to the conformal invariance, but this is a slightly, one can show a...
that C has to be constant.
No, this is a field. This is any covector field.
The smile is supposed to be real.
It's a real photon. The photons are imaginary.
Right, but then there's a field strength for it.
Yes, exactly. And it doesn't contribute to the Dirac kinetic term, and you can assume that also it doesn't have a kinematic term. So basically, you don't need to. So although you can formally think about Dirac theory as a D1 times U1 gauge theory, but you can transform out any contribution of the D1 gauge fields. Yeah. So you can because of this hidden symmetry.
But this depends on the specific way of writing your Dirac one.
Exactly.
Usually we write it without the real part, and it's real modulo boundary terms. Right. The usual.
Yeah. This is a symmetry of this particular. If you write the Dirac in this.
We wrote the real part.
Yeah.
This is why you.
Exactly.
Don't write the real.
Yes. Yes. This is correct. And what I wanted to still say. So this is just an example that this kind of mechanism, how does it work? And the claim is that you can make this kind of forgetting of the gauge field also for nilpotent symmetries. So this is not an empty definition. So this is a possible way eventually to get rid of nilpotent gauge fields. And they still act similarly to here, faithfully on the matter fields, but you don't need to compensate in the gauge covariant derivation. Some details, I don't have much time, so some details of the concrete construction. So the smallest nilpotent Lie group is the three generator Heisenberg group. This is generated by three symbols, let's say Q, P, and E, and the only non-zero bracket being that the Q commutator P is proportional to this third element, this central element. Basically, this is called Heisenberg group because it resembles to the Heisenberg exchange relations. Now, the outer derivations, meaning the generators of the symmetries of this, the complexified version of this, the Lie algebra of this group, is nothing but the GL2C when you mix these Q and P generators with each other, and you scale this central element just by the determinant of this transformation. So therefore, one can form the semi-direct product of this complexified Heisenberg group and the GLC2. Now, with that, you can build a very minimal conservative Poincaré group extension. So you put here GLC2, which at least infinitesimally, it splits as U1 times D1 times SLC2 by the polar decomposition. You plug in translations where this group acts naturally as the Lorentz group acts on the translations. Yeah, and with this prescribed group action, this part also acts on the QP and E generators so that you cannot, that this group becomes indecomposable. And this is a minimal example to a conservative Poincaré group extension where you also have a compact component. So we construct in this manuscript, we construct a generally covariant Lagrangian by taking a vector bundle with this thing as a structure group. And we put up several invariant Lagrangians. So for this, we need to find nice defining representations and its invariance. I'm not sure if I should elaborate on this, because maybe if one says less, it could be more in some cases. I don't know what is the opinion if it was too much information. But the key idea behind this finding these Lagrangians is that we find a nice representation for the natural representation space for this group. If you take this scripted A to be the two-generator complex Grassmann algebra, which is four-dimensional, happens to be isomorphic, if you want, to the exterior algebra of the lower index two-spinor space, then, well, it is an algebra of this kind. You have zero forms, one forms, and two forms of spinors. It turns out that if you take the at least one forms, the subspace of at least one forms, then this Heisenberg group happens to be isomorphic to the group of left multiplication by elements of exponentials from here. So it's basically a particle insertion, heuristically speaking, it's like a particle insertion transformation. So it is kind of a QFT motivated picture, and we build up fields based on this and present an invariant Lagrangian. So I think I will skip to the final conclusion, maybe, that the main message of this talk is, let's say, the re-understanding, group theoretical re-understanding of the Kolman-Mandula theorem based on this Levy decomposition theorem. So generally, we are thinking about Kolman-Mandula theorem as a kind of field theoretical theorem, but in fact, it is driven by the Oreferty theorem if you assume that your Poincaré group extension is finite dimensional. Namely, Oreferty theorem says that any Poincaré group extension needs to be one of the cases of the trivial extension of the extended radical or embedding into the simple Lie group, so this A, B, or C cases. And Kolman-Mandula theorem implicitly assumes that the non-Poincaré symmetry generators have a positive definite invariant internal scalar product, and this rules out this extended radical, including Susi. Yeah? Also, it implicitly assumes that there is no symmetry breaking present, which rules out this possibility that you embed the Poincaré group into a simple Lie group. So you are left with the Oreferty theorem case A. So our mechanism relaxes the second assumption that the internal group is a compact semi-direct product with a nilpotent group. And therefore, the internal scalar product is positive semi-definite, but not positive definite. It degenerates on the nilpotent generators. And actually, Susi uses a similar assumption to relax the conditions. So actually, when you are considering Haag-Lopushansky-Zonius theorem, they are speaking about super Lie algebras, but in fact, you can super Lie algebra is a other way to say that you allow a certain way of the extension of the radical of the nilpotent side. So both these are Oreferty B type mechanism, and also I would like to point out as a closing remark that the Kolman-Mandula also has another hidden assumption. It also assumes that the symmetry generator strictly conserves one particle subspaces. So if one is dreaming about adding some nilpotent symmetry generators, of course one needs to add some kind of representations, some room of representation space here. And one could ask the question whether this assumption is not too strong. So are we 200% sure that the symmetry generators of a theory should restrict strictly the one particle subspaces or not? Or could eventually mix higher, nilpotently, some higher particle contribution to lower particle subspace? So a summary. So, well, as we know, hints, the experimental hints to supersymmetries as of 2019 doesn't seem to be there. And the question is that do mathematical alternatives, at least to Susi, exist? And we have shown some other Poincaré group extensions, which are also Oreferty type B case. We call it the conservative extensions of the Poincaré group, meaning that the complementing symmetries to space-time symmetries are strictly internal. And we have constructed an example, so it's not an empty definition. It happens to connect, happens to make a unified symmetry group with the compact gauge and the space-time symmetries. It harmonizes. It happens to harmonize, in contrast to Susi, with the present experimental situation because of this forgetting homomorphism onto the known symmetries, which Susi doesn't admit. So you need to break the Susi. The mechanism could be called a symmetry hiding because of this forgetting homomorphism. And we are in the process of testing it in a minimal model. So the group theoretical idea is presented here, and this minimal model is worked out in this example. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
So time for a few questions.
Yes. So kind of senior, right? You're making SL to C, in particular Lorentz, you're making it local symmetry?
Yes, 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 yes. Basically, I'm using a Palatini-like formulation.
This means that gravity is included?
Yes. Yes.
But then the question is, where are the diffeomorphisms? Because diffeomorphisms.
Yeah. So this group, what I was speaking about, is the first order symmetric group of the general, otherwise generally covariant theory. So in fact, it's a vector bundle. So in fact, it's a vector bundle where the structure group is this funny is this thing. And basically, you do have the diffeomorphism if you, in the most general theory, I just restricted myself for the sake of simplicity to the Poincaré component, to the first order symmetries of this component. Yeah.
So your idea that translations act vertically?
No, they act horizontally. They act horizontally.
And if this is internal symmetry?
Only the Lorentz, only this part is internal. Yeah? So this will sit in the horizontal, naturally in the horizontal part, yeah? So it's not a completely screwed up model. Nature might not behave like this, but this is just, let's say, the first order component of this generally covariant.
Again, the general question, why worry about translations rather than diffeomorphisms?
In fact, they are the diffeomorphism. This is just the first order component of that particular group. Yeah, basically, it's the symmetric group here. I mean, is that the vector bundle transformations of a certain vector bundle? And if you take a preferred space-time point and you make an expansion around the point, this is the first order expansion. Yeah, so this will be the structure group of the vector bundle, and this comes, of course, from the residual relic from the horizontal movements in the total space of the vector bundle.
Therefore, are you contemplating that there's some hidden diffeomorphism line?
No, it's not a diffeomorphism. It's a stepping on a hidden in a hierarchy. So basically, the fiber, it's like a theory is basically like this, that you have a vector bundle where you have a four-dimensional space-time manifold, and the fiber is a doubled exterior algebra of the two-spinor space. So basically, you have a exterior algebra of the two-spinor space, tensored with a complex conjugate exterior algebra of the two-spinor space, and there is this natural action of the Heisenberg group as well as the compact internal and the SLC2 group on this entire hierarchy. Actually, such a construction was tried in the end of 80s by Walde and Anko, but they took an algebra-valued field theory where the algebra was too simple. So the representation space was too small, so they couldn't achieve this. They thought that this is impossible. In fact, if you take this kind of, it's basically like a Fox, like a semi-classical limit of a QFT, that you let the space-time degrees of freedom vary as a classical field, but the internal space is motivated by quantum field theory. Basically, you take the exterior algebra of the two spinors, which means that you assume, in quotation marks, a fermion, which obeying Pauli principle, and the corresponding complex conjugates, a charge conjugate particle together with it. So it is point-wise, the representation space is somewhat similar to a Carr algebra, but it's not a Carr algebra, but carries the same amount of degrees of freedom. Yeah. And you have this natural action of the Heisenberg group on it. It happens so. The Heisenberg group action on this kind of QFT-like picture is equivalent that you insert equal amount of particles and antiparticles into this hierarchy. Yeah, so it's a kind of, in quotation marks, yeah. Of course, this is a classical field theory. Yeah.
The main problem I'm having with attempts to understand how things would be finite at very small distances or something like that, is that our groups are too big in the following sense. We all believe the Lorentz group to have an absolute validity, but the Lorentz group is non-compact.
Yes.
And the problem with that is you can Lorentz transform forever, reaching elements of nature that are nowhere realizing that something is wrong with this. Mm. So the suspicion is you should try to compactify the Lorentz group, and that's modify one variable and everything else also. Yeah. Any ideas about this?
Yes, I think it's in my second slides where I didn't elaborate on this point, but I think it's a very good point. So as I mentioned, this argument is about the first order symmetries. So if you are thinking about a generally covariant theory based on some possibly curved or whatever kind of space-time manifold and the vector bundle over it for matter fields, then of course it has many, many vector bundle automorphisms, which are means that there are flows on the total space of the vector bundle. And then if you distinguish a space-time point, you can basically expand in Taylor series-wise. You can make a formal differential geometric meaning of this, but actually it means a Taylor expansion of the symmetry generators around the point. And basically I was speaking about the first order component of this expansion. So as you said, the Lorentz symmetries shouldn't be taken here seriously because they are only the infinitesimal, they are about only the infinitesimal structure of the generators. They say nothing about the far distance behavior of the whole thing. This only this whole argument that I was speaking about is about the local structure of the theory.
But what I'm saying is it could refer to the commutators. We usually think we know the commutator algebra, but if you say more, the commutators are non-zero. Mm-hmm. Something has to be the right-hand side, and normally you can be zero.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, what kind of game can you play there?
Well, actually, the nilpotent generators are such that you can eventually go to zero, yeah, with nilpotent generators. That is the definition of a nilpotent group. I have some spare slides on it if we have a few minutes for that. So let me just search for it. So the definition of the nilpotency is that if you act after each other many generators, then you eventually go to zero. So if you have nested commutators of the generator elements, eventually you can go to zero. That's the definition of nilpotent symmetry group. I think that was mostly what you mentioned. Yeah. That's just the definition of this.
Okay, I think we should break. So let's thank Andres.
Thank you.